I mean, this is true of life. That's actually what I've observed in life as a whole. But it's definitely true of a follower of Jesus. That the more you follow him, the more likely you'll put yourself in circumstances where you'll feel powerless and you'll be led to places you do not want to go. So I find that a very confronting feature of life as a follower of Jesus. Have you ever heard of the Peter Principle? It's a thing where you work in a business and you get promoted to your level of incompetence. And then people go, like, you're probably promoted above your ability, but people don't want you to get promoted more because they don't want you to do more harm. But they don't want to promote you. Nobody wants you to be promoted less because they don't want to put up with you. Happens a lot in government, I've been told. But I wonder if in your life you've ever been overlooked for a promotion. You know that you've warranted it, but the annoying thing is on the Peter Principle, somebody else who's more incompetent than you has been promoted so that they can get out of your department or your business. And let's just get them out of here, so we'll promote them instead. Don't know if that's happened to you. But that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is the practical reality as a follower of Jesus of experiencing things like being overlooked for promotion, of having other people in your life seemingly have more power than you, and discovering that being powerless is not an enjoyable experience, but actually is what we do as followers of Jesus. Remember some years ago, I mean, in church land, it's a bit different in terms of promotions, but some years ago, I'd been a youth pastor for 17 years, I think, and I was thinking, well, I've done my apprenticeship. It's about time I'm due for a promotion. I should become senior pastor now. So anyway, I'm putting this very crudely because I think it's best way. So I was being interviewed for, I went for various roles as a lead pastor in various churches. And my good wife over here, she might even not remember the comment. But what was happening is I was taking control of the interview room, which is kind of my way anyway. But I was taking control of the interview room. And essentially, the way it was happening is Anne said to me, you think you really want to be a senior pastor. You think you deserve this. She questioned me on my attitude. And I questioned me on my attitude because my wife questioned me on my attitude. And I realised that just wanting to go up, by the way, now that I'm a senior pastor, it's a pain in the neck, so I don't know what I was wanting. But just wanting to go up is not good enough. Just thinking I deserve this, just being in a room and being interviewed and telling everybody, look, I'm the leader you want. I'm the leader you need. The one that you're missing in your life. She questioned me on my attitude. And I questioned me on my attitude because my wife questioned me on my attitude. And I realised that just wanting to go up, and by the way, now that I'm a senior pastor, it's a pain in the neck, so I don't know what I was wanting. But just wanting to go up is not good enough as your pastor of another church. If you read my CV, you'll know which one I ended up choosing. But it was what I would call humble training. Humble training. I learned that term from my first job in engineering. I'd done 4 years of engineering. I'll be honest with you, I didn't do amazing at that because I was too busy enjoying other things that weren't associated with engineering. But I got through. I got through in 4 years and I got a job. And my very first job, my boss sat me down and said, "You think you know a lot. So we've got you on humble training." I was like, "Oh, what's that?" "You are going to work on the factory floor under the lowest person on the factory floor." So in that job, there's like the techs who put all the things that the engineers build together. So I was the lackey of the tech, and they let me know that I was their slave. I heard in no uncertain terms what they thought of engineers, but it was humble training. It was a lesson to me to teach me what really mattered. I've really appreciated that way of going, and I feel like that God has had to put me through lots of humble training to get me where he wants me. And that's why I really like the story of Jacob. In Genesis chapter 32, if you know this story, Jacob is this really hungry man. He has done whatever he possibly can to grab a hold of every blessing and every opportunity for his life. He's a second son. So through deceitful means, he manages to position himself in all the birthright and the blessing of the first son. He's ambitious, terribly ambitious. Anyway, his ambition leads to some trouble, especially with his brother, who was the oldest lad. If you know this story, Jacob is this really hungry man. He has done whatever he possibly can to grab a hold of every blessing and every opportunity for his life. He's a second son. So through deceitful means, he manages to divide his party in two, to send some of his family off that way, some of his family off this way to kind of mitigate the risk. He sends off lots of extravagant gifts with pacifying messages, and then he prays to God this prayer: "Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I'm afraid he'll come and attack me and all the mothers with their children. But you've said, I'll surely make you prosper and make your descendants like the sand of the sea." Praise that prayer. He's really, really worried. Do you know how the story goes on from there? Really important part of the story is he waits. He's prayed his prayer and he waits. And he waits, and then a man comes with him in the night when he's alone and wrestles with him till daybreak. And when the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said to him, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." Jacob replied, "I'll not let you go unless you bless me." And the man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he said. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with humans, and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And he blessed him. So here is Jacob, a schemer, plotting and planning to position everything in just the right way so that he will win. All of these decisions and all these choices lead him to a place where he's in big trouble. He has no control. And finally, at this point, he throws himself on God. And he spends the night, as we discover, wrestling with God, crippled by God, and blessed by God. And the blessing is he gets his name changed from Jacob, which means the deceiver, to Israel, which means he who struggles with God. And this is the thing about the life of following Jesus, is we, in the normal life, the life that you and I are taught to believe in as students in schools, as laborers in our workplace, is it's one of going up and up and up. But when you follow Jesus, it's one of eventually being humbled, of eventually realizing that all the things that you are clinging to, your status, your possession, your power, are actually not enough. And you come to places in your life where you are led to places you do not want to go. You come to situations in your life where you take on roles that you feel are beneath you. And you do it because on the way through, God is testing and trying your character because he says, I need to be in control of your life. And the reason why I like Jacob is I have never gone down easy on this one. I am the worst saint ever because I give God the greatest grief in wrestling with you. Now, if Anne says something like that to me, I don't just go, oh, yeah, of course, you're absolutely right. I'm like, I don't necessarily fight with her, but I'm like, oh, my goodness, I hate that. I don't go down without a fight when it comes to what God tries to teach me. Anyone else like this? Well, you're just frankly better saints than I. By the way, I've been reading a biography of Mother Teresa, and I'm so pleased to find out that she would say the same about herself. She didn't ever think she was a great saint. I haven't gone down easy. It's taken serious wrestles with God for him to persuade me that his way is the right way. It's taken some injury even. Thankfully not on my body like Jacob bore in his life, but certainly on my ego and my aspirations and sometimes even in my relationships. But it's this wrestle. It's the wrestle with God that leads to woundedness, where we learn that it's our dependence on God which matters, which will bring the blessing that all of us are longing for, but so busy pursuing in an ungodly, unchristlike way. Jacob has to learn to be powerless to find out that God is powerful. Peter will be powerless so that God can be powerful. Jason Howard will be powerless so that God will be powerful. These are the kind of lessons we learn in life. A few years ago, my dad had a stroke, and I shared this with him because he'd gone from this driven, ambitious man to a man that had to surrender his speech, surrender some of his cognitive abilities, surrender his dexterity because of some paralysis in his body. That was an unbelievable, difficult thing for him and for those of us who had experienced him through his whole life as a strong, powerful man. And I remember just talking through with that with my dad, saying, Dad, isn't it sobering to realize that this is the way of Christ? Not that we get a stroke, but that when we find ourselves in these kinds of places, actually God can do great things even there. Say all this. Partly because I think I'm among friends. I'm among people who think that the way that the world works is up and up and up and up and up. I certainly think folk down the front row would imagine that that is their journey. I also think I'm among friends in terms of you don't go down lightly. If God had an alternative pathway for you that wasn't what you wanted, I'm sure you'll argue with him. And I want to affirm you seem to be among the people of Israel, so they certainly did that. And I like the honesty. The reality is you'll come down. You may wrestle, but God is actually stronger than you. And I also think that as I look at us as a church as a whole, we wish that we could go from one strength to the next, to the next, to the next. There was a time, a long time ago, when church had authority in our society. It had influence and it had power. I'll be honest with you, I don't think they were good times from my point of view. Because from my point of view, they don't look like this. They don't look humble enough, powerless enough. They don't look like Peter, in that as he aged in faith, the less power he had. As he followed Jesus, the more humbled he became. But we are, whether we want it or not, in a place of humbling. We definitely are. We can make our plans, we can scheme all we like, but actually that's not where our hope lies, and that's not what I think God would have for us. It lies in letting God lead us, maybe to places we don't want to go. It lies in us following Jesus humbly. That's where I think it lies. I would have zero aspiration for our church to have a name that is recognised in any public sphere, partly because that makes you a target, but mostly because I'm just not interested in us having any sense of social power. But what I do want us to do is find ourselves letting go of anything that we think is powerful or get our rights known, and instead just serving humbly where the need is and not caring if nobody knows about it. Doesn't it already feel like that's what Jesus would want us to do? Quiet service, day to day, not grasp after looking important or looking successful, just getting on and doing what needs to be done, the right thing. Doesn't that sound like an honest way of following Jesus? That's the way we ought to live, isn't it? It's not that complicated. In the way that you do your work, in the way that you perform in your sports, just get on with it. Don't try to push others down to make yourself look important. Just get on with it and do the right thing. Live humbly. Don't care if somebody else gets rewarded above you. What does that matter? Just follow Jesus. See where he leads you. And same with our church. Let's just serve where we can. If there's an opportunity, don't scheme too much on how to make it look more important than it is. Just do it. You know, one of the things that I believe with the Aboriginal church is they definitely need churches like ours to partner with them. I'm really sad that Don couldn't make it today, because I would have loved for you to hear his story. We'll just rebook it. There'll be other opportunities. I'd love for us to partner with them. I met with Don on Monday last week, and he said to me, he said, "Jason, it's great that your church wants to help us. How can we help you?" And I was like, "Don, you can help us understand your people and how we can live together. You can help us understand, like, this property's on Kaurna land, understand how we acknowledge that. But you can help us understand what we just cannot grasp by ourselves. So we might give money, and we do, We might even give time, and we should. But they can give us insight, which we can't get. And I really look forward to that progressing. But here's the thing. I've noticed, because I've lived around Aboriginal ministry now my whole life, grew up in it, and I've noticed people love making themselves famous by it. Look at us. We have a reconciliation plan. Look at us. We do this. Look at us. We do that. And honestly, as Aboriginal people would tell you, most of that is for 5 minutes. 5 minutes. We did our bit. We wrote our article. We got the photos. And then we moved on. That's no good. Denominationally, we did that in 1999. In 1999, in our denomination, we said sorry. Got 400 people together, cobbled together a careful statement, put them in all in Flinders Street Baptist, and we said sorry. It's the right thing to do. We took a photo. Year 2000. As far as I can tell, denominationally, we did nothing. Year 2001, nothing. 2002, nothing. 2003, nothing. 11 years later, nothing. That's wrong. It's wrong to do any act of service to appear to look like you're doing the right thing. It's not this way. Definitely not this way. This way where it's a way of humility, it's a way of powerlessness, it's a way of service, and it's a way of following Jesus. And that's the way we have to work in our world. I'm not making any comment on any other church, but the bit I'm responsible for, you're responsible for, is our church. And the kinds of things we do in our world. And we want to follow the way of Jesus, don't we? And I reckon when I look at Peter, and I reckon when I look at what he is told he is going to experience, I think, wow, that is actually the way of Jesus. It's not just true for Peter. It's true for us all that we'll surrender. We'll go many times where we don't want to go. We'll stretch out our hands. Somebody else will lead us. And in that, Jesus will do good things. So, I wanted to share with this with you to explain our posture as a church, that we are looking to do good, and we are looking to not tell anyone about it as best we can. Just want to do it because we don't want to be powerful. We just want to serve. I'm telling you, because it's not just the acts we do together, it's how you live too. If you live like that, I reckon you'd make a Jesus kind of difference in the world. Let me pray. Our God, it's actually pretty hard to live like this. For Peter, it cost him his life. For some of the folk here, it may have even cost jobs or promotions. But we don't honestly want to live our life grasping after things we cannot hold anyway. And I would pray that for all of us that we would come to a point in our lives, a point of humility, where we recognize that you're the powerful one. And that the way that you've rescued the world is not by grabbing it by its neck or overcoming it with greater vicious power. But the way that you've overcome the world is through your son laying down his life, taking on the suffering and the sin and the shame of our world and dragging it through death into new life. And I pray that as followers of Jesus, day on day, that our lives might tell that same story. Think of all the myriad of places that each one of us are put, in schoolyards, in universities, in workplaces, in cafes and pubs, among our friends and our family. And all those places, God, may people experience us as humble servants who follow Jesus. And then I think about our church. And I want to thank you for all the places that you have humbled us. You've shown us that we're not powerful in this world. All the times that we felt like we're irrelevant. I want to thank you for that blessing. Because it's teaching us to put our trust where the real change will come. And all those places, God, may people experience us as humble servants who follow Jesus. And then I think about our church. And I want to thank you for all the places that you have humbled us. You've shown us that we're not powerful in this world. All the times that we felt like we're irrelevant. I want to thank you for that blessing. Let's close our time with a song about how good God is. He's a good father to us. Just checking I've covered everything off. I'm famous at forgetting things. There is coffee today, so given it's a long weekend, you might want to hang around and have coffee from Amy and Emily. Thank you, ladies. Or Amy, I'm not sure who's the coffee barista, but thank you for that. And also remember the books as well.